I don't know when Patrick's going to start this podcast on his editing, but we can welcome the people back who are returning, and that's pretty cool that they're learning. And as you can hear by the additional voice and my extra like level of excitement, I do finally have a guest. We finally have a guest. We've done it. And which is challenging because we're not paying our guests any money or anything like that. But I do.
The talent.
Yeah, I'm not paying the talent. No, and I do. I've been thinking a lot about the podcast. I've been listening to it. I worked with a bunch of musicians, and it was really instructive in like finding the groove. Like I'm finding the groove here. You know, trying to be like Booker T and the MGs, and just like have the sound, just a groove that we slide into. And I think me making a couple of observational comments seems to be kind of groovy. People like that. We were just talking about Juuls and vaping, which is like what I am currently doing. And Patrick inadvertently did something that really pisses me off. And he sent me a New York Times article about vaping.
Oh. Sounds like my mother.
Exactly. And I hate that shit. It's exactly what my mom and dad do to me all the time. And I tried to read that, but I can't read it because I've already used up my New York Times articles for the month.
Right.
Right? And I am
it's
not...
a killer.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't have...
You're not the, wasting it on that.
Right, exactly. And I don't have the budget to, you know, to subscribe to all these news shows. Thank God for NPR. But I look at this headline, and I want to read it because I don't want to be one of those people who reads the headline and then comments without reading it, but... Oh, hey, that's okay. It's okay. No, it's okay. There's vibrating. Me chewing ice is in the last podcast.
Okay.
Are you hearing something?
It was
oh, okay. Oh, God, don't worry about it.
Okay. So, anyways, but I read this headline, and it's like, yeah, how do we stop nicotine from being fucking awesome? You know, like, what can we do about nicotine and its awesomeness, you know? Because, so, I don't know if you guys know this. Do you know where nicotine comes from? Like, do you know, like, why nicotine is nicotine?
South.
It's pretty awesome, right? So, when there is, and don't worry, I'll introduce my guest soon enough, but you can just, you know, embrace the reverberations of her voice. And so, when there is a forest fire, right, that is when tobacco grows. Tobacco grows post-forest fire. Ah. And so, the seed of the tobacco plant lies dormant for sometimes hundreds of years, right, before it is... before whatever sprouts, grows. But if it's been dormant for 100 years, it does not know how much its predators have evolved, right? Because, like, you don't know what kind of thing is going to try to eat you. And so what nicotine is the world's most complex and powerful bug poison,
wow.
Right? Like, nicotine kills, like, any predator bug. And this, I love this because it's like naked lunch, right? It's
right?
Like the bugs,
yeah.
You know? And so this incredibly complicated bug poison, humans are like, oh shit, there's a forest fire. We got to go get this plant, dry it out, and then smoke the bug poison.
Yeah, how did that part happen?
I don't know. I don't know how that part happened.
Yeah.
But it's like nicotine feels really good in your brain. It's terribly addictive. I mean, that's the problem. And the other thing is that, and I think we're going to talk about movies today, is that cigarettes are such great communication tools, right? And now the vape kind of replaces that, but it's like I can pause and then exhale, and it's this great thing. You know, I can gesture with the cigarette. Like, the history of cigarettes in movies is immense. Like, all the things that you can do with the cigarette. You can flick it. You got fire. You got, you know, just saying, it's incredible. You can diffuse light with it. You can do all these amazing things. And so when I tried to read this New York Times article that I could not read, that triggered me because it reminded me of shit that my parents do. And that's right, Mom, Dad, I'm 45 days cigarette free. Just that nicotine is really incredible. You know, and so how are we going to stop nicotine? Like, how are you going to stop the world's most complicated bug poison that lives dormant in the woods for two? Like, we have no fucking clue.
You can't stop it. You can only hope to continue.
Right, exactly. You can't stop it. You can only hope to contain it, which is an excellent way to introduce Jenny Jones, my guest, right? Because I remember very vividly both when I met Patrick and Jenny, but I met Jenny at a party of a friend of ours, and it was an art party, you know, and Jenny has this really rad basketball tattoo that, like, indicates comprehensive knowledge of basketball, and I was such, like, I was trying so hard to make it in the art world in Minnesota. I had, you know, erased any part of my personality that was not conducive to my career, and then it was like, let's talk about basketball.
I and I believe it was, we talked about the Lakers the first time.
Oh, maybe so, yeah. Yeah,
we did. My hatred for the Lakers.
Sure, right, which is totally understandable because they left Minneapolis. There's no fucking lakes in LA.
I know, nobody thinks about that.
Yeah, I know. They know.
And you can say it without being insulting, unlike... talking about the Utah Jazz and saying how ridiculous that is.
Yeah, totally. No, the Utah Jazz is super. Nothing has less jazz than Utah.
Yeah.
Nothing's less jazzy than Utah. But so obviously Jenny Jones has immense credibility that Patrick and I want her on the show. I mean, it's the greatest honor we could ever bestow upon a human. Jenny is a, she knows a ton about basketball. She's also written a couple books about movies, worked in like the fancy nonprofit movie land quite a bit. Just a really fun person to drink with and talk to. And Jenny, we're just really happy to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Yeah,
happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to have you.
I am honored.
Yeah, and so we were talking about what I mean. Like me, the thing is, me talking over people is like my natural state. I've been talking over people for like my whole life, you know. And just earlier, Patrick and I were talking. He was like, can I have a break? And I'm like, sure. And then I like followed him into the kitchen.
And I keep talking.
I'm like, no, you don't understand. I haven't reached the end yet. But in like that's, I mean, like in my life, it's not like the biggest problem because I'm still fundamentally a considerate person and people understand that, but in like the world it became like more of a problem because the political climate whatever shifted and just communication in general has shifted, and men talking, white dudes talking all the time has like become a problem because often they're just being dicks, you know. But so I'm in the face of this, of white men being dicks and shouting people down and trying to control the narrative while just being a natural talker, like coming from a long line of talkers in my family, both men and women, and just wanting to practice my art form, you know, without, you know, feeding into this narrative, which is why from like this point on, Jenny Jones is in charge, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah. All right. We're turning the patriarchy on its head.
Yeah, we're turning the patriarchy on its head.
Right here today.
Finally.
Yeah.
I mean, being in control, isn't that awesome? You know? I mean, I think that's like kind of the, that's what like is in it for men, you know?
Well, there's this new study out. Have you seen this? About how power actually corrupts the brain. Like it's a physiological impact on your brain. Which I think is really fascinating, and not in a good way.
Yeah, it's the, that's another thing that I'm trying to reference the Lord of the Rings as much as possible when I talk about the LA story.
Okay.
And this is very much it, the ring of power, right? Like
yeah,
that is
yeah,
the
yeah.
ring of power, that you get close to power and it starts to, it's changing your fucking brain chemistry, you know?
Right, right.
Like Frodo can take it. I'm trying to be Frodo, you know, and not, and be, you know, and not let the power.
Keeping the ring in your pocket.
Yeah,
as
keeping
much
the
as
ring.
Can.
Yeah, keeping it around a chain.
Yeah.
You know, because I've got the face and the gender and the educational background, which is like, Dave, do you want to run the show? Do you want to drink from this chalice of blood? You know. I'm trying not to drink from the chalice of blood. You know.
Well, no, I mean, I think it's a part of it. You do, but I don't think it's that you don't. It's that you don't necessarily stifle other people from doing it as well. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. No, I do. I mean, you want to share the ball, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You want to, like...
Ball don't lie.
Yeah, ball don't lie. You know, you want to pass the rock, yeah. You know, and I know, and I definitely agree with that. I mean, and there's like these like meta layers of like, that's what good leadership is good. Great leadership is empowering people to make their own decisions, trusting people, being trustworthy and trusting other people, you know, I mean, yeah. That's.
And I think at the crux of that too is feeling comfortable in your own power. Like, you know, your ego is stable enough that you can allow other people to take the power and be fine with it.
Yeah. So, no shine blocking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Don't be a shine blocker.
Exactly.
Did you read that interview about the history of Bill Clinton's shine blocking?
No.
I mean, I really just really liked it on the subject of shine blocking, that I think that's a problem with Bill Clinton is he has difficulty. He has to be the center of attention.
Right.
You know, and that was a really great thing about my time in LA is there's so much of that in LA of people who have to be the center of attention. Mm-hmm. But then you find these people who are more than capable of being the center of attention, but don't need to be the center of attention.
Exactly.
And that's the most fun person around, you know?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that, yeah, I mean, I was always really good at class discussion, you know? Like, people wanted me to say something.
Shockingly.
Yeah.
I don't know if people wanted it right. from me, but they got it.
Right. No, yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like, Jenny Jones has the curse of knowing more about movies and basketball than 99% of the dudes out there.
They don't always like that.
I know.
I can tell you. They may think they do. They're like, oh, you like basketball. Oh, we can. But actually, they don't always love that.
Yeah.
They like to know the most.
Yeah. Yeah, they do like
to know
the most.
I'm generalizing, of course.
Right, yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it's. And that's, I think that's another part of it is that, like, I'm driving the Lyft in LA was a real lesson in stereotypes, right? And how just quickly we are to stereotype people. And I would pick people up in this Lyft and I would have it in my head. What kind of music does this person like? Like, what kind of stories do they want to hear? What kind of, and so many times they would just explode that prejudice out of the water. Like, people liking country music. That you would never think wanted to hear country music, you know. People being totally offensive, who you thought would be super polite. People being super polite, you know, just that when you get down to who we are and what we think, we're very diverse, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't fit into the boxes that people are always trying to put us in. Mm-hmm. And that's a universal thing. I think everyone knows whatever your race, gender, orientation is, what it's like to have somebody tell you who you are and kind of minimizing terms, you know, that because that can be a class thing. Or one time I dressed up like a rural white dude and went to one of the comedy shows I was working on, and people were mean as hell to me, you know, like because they didn't know who I was, and I wore like a Ford hat and like a polyester construction hoodie and was just like, hey, I'm wondering if there's any shows around here. And people were like, no, you don't want to come in here. And so when I got done, I was like, hey, so give me a list of the people who are allowed to come to your show. And they were like, you know, it's just like, no, just give me the fucking list. Like, what belief systems are you allowed to have to come to your fucking comedy show?
Right.
You know?
It's like, no black hoodies.
Right, exactly. Like, these rules. And just, I believe that, like, the Dave Good Show is for everyone. You know, that's a huge part of it. Like,
that's got to be in your tagline.
Yeah. Currently, it's the Dave Good Show. It's not about me.
Oh.
You know, but yeah, but it is. It's for everyone. I have like a revolutionary fundamental belief in that, you know, that I want to bring people together and I want to bring everyone together, you know, that I want everyone to be able to like listen to this podcast and have a good time listening to it. I'm not saying that you're going to be unchallenged. I hope that I'm capable of saying something. We're capable of saying something that adjusts how people might think, but you know, everyone is welcome. Everyone's, you know, that's all the great things. Like everyone is welcome to listen to the Pixies, you know, like there's no litmus test of if you're in this club. You just have to like the Pixies and then you like the Pixies and then that's, you know,
that's right.
That's it, you know, so.
So I'm curious, when you talk about the Lyft experience and how it was this sort of stereotype busting thing, do you think it's more that you just encountered so many more people through that job, or do you think it's the actual process of being in a car with someone driving you? Like, I know that when you're driving a car, you're actually in a semi-hypnotic state. So people, like, will remember repressed memories when they're driving and stuff. And so I'm just curious your take on what that was about.
Yeah. I mean, I'm forever changed by the experience. I mean, I feel like I was like me... I was just watching True Detective to get some good lines to mark for the show, and like mainlining the truth of the universe is a line. Yeah. Like, I felt like I was mainlining the fucking truth of the universe when I was driving that Lyft in LA. And that is a part of it. Like, that's, it's totally random. So the way it's structured is, to get your bonus, you have to meet, you have to take a certain number of rides. Mm-hmm. And the only way to meet that bonus is to take every ride. Right, there's some places that you can go to, but the fastest way to get to 85 rides in a week is to just take every single ride.
Yeah.
And so you would try to control, you're trying to get high volume rides, like Westwood, UCLA. That's one of the centers of the Lyft driving universe. And why I know that the Lyft experience has still never been remotely covered by a major newspaper. If you're not talking about Westwood, You're not even scratching the fucking surface. If you're not talking about the holding area at LAX, one reporter, please, go to the holding area at LAX and then tell me about the miracle that is rideshare. So I think that, yeah, what you're saying about both me driving and being in hypnotic state, and, I mean, they're dependent on me. They're in my car. I'm driving them through LA.
Yeah, their safety is in your hands.
Their safety is in my hands, and that is like the big, that's like the social fabric of the Lyft experience, is that you, that's why people are well behaved on both ends.
Right.
Because,
I mean, what an interesting power dynamic. You know, you've got this power.
Yeah.
And yet you're the employee.
Right. Yeah.
And almost worse than that.
Yeah, because I'm no one's employee. I mean, I work for...
But you're at the behest of the rider. Yeah.
I am, and their rating can get me fired. Mm-hmm. A 4-star rating to a rideshare driver means fire that person. That's what that rating means. Because if you don't maintain above like a average, which is like 4.4, then you get fired. So if you're not like 5 stars, you're like, fuck you, get fired, you know? Oh my God. No, nobody knows that. And, you know, some people never give 5-star ratings. And so they're very much in control. And that really, that's a real idea worm that gets inside your head, is what is your review going to be? You know, you're watching your rating go up and down. Ugh. You know, you get a cold, your rating goes down. Yeah. Somebody clipped their fingernails in the back of my car and did not tell me. And I didn't look back there, because you're just picking people up. And then my rating takes a nosedive because I take 5 rides of people who get in the car and there's fingernails all over the place. Ick. And it's also extremely intimate.
Yes.
You know, so there is this intimacy. I mean, it's like I said, Westwood is one of the centers of the Lyft universe. You got like Westwood, you got LAX, you got West Hollywood. Then maybe USC. This is where you're trying to be. But I didn't like USC because you don't know when the hell you're going to get just shot out into the middle of nowhere. But that happens like anytime. So I'm in Westwood at 7 o'clock picking up students and dropping them off, because it's, you know, 1.9 miles from the library to the dorms. And that's too far to walk if you're tired or whatever. And it's only $5. And why wouldn't you take a Lyft? And I pick up a guy and he's... I don't know where he's going, but he's going 1 hour and 7 minutes away. So I've been taking 5-minute rides, boom, 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 you're in the zone, and then suddenly this guy wants to go 1 hour and 7 minutes away, and he's a resident in the psychology department. He's going to be a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm on this drive, and now he starts asking me questions. about who I am and what my motivations are for things in this world. So suddenly now I'm in therapy, you know, like then suddenly I'm in therapy, and thank goodness he was good at his job, and you know, and suddenly we're talking about my family and how I got here, and you know, and it's incredible, and I'll remember it forever, you know, and him just being like, you know, people aren't always, I'm like, people are always going to see me the way I want to be seen. Mm-hmm. You know, I know what you're saying. You know, so yeah, but you know, just a chance to talk to people, you know, and a chance. So there's a balance, because they're behaving because I'm driving, I'm behaving because they're rating me. And then also to drive that much, you need energy from your riders. If you're not getting positive energy,
I never thought about from that.
That's really the best thing you can do for your rideshare driver, is to be in a good mood and maybe
pass that along.
Yeah, pass that along, because that'll keep them going. Because they're driving way longer than a person should drive. There's no rules about that. I mean, a long haul trucker, well, you're just going straight down the road. I mean, that's exhausting. But I mean, I'm trying to make my bonus. I'm 11 hours into driving in traffic in LA trying to make my bonus. Like, that's not healthy. So, yeah, but that's the... There were these guys, these two guys from El Salvador, making a lot of racially tinged humor, right? And they kept saying, well, you know, this is what you think, you know, and this is what we think, and this is what you think about us, and this is what we think about you, and they think they're being super funny. And I just am, like, getting pushed to my limit. There's a whole morality component, which is a whole other thing about Lyft, and I was just like, I am a human spirit! Right?
And you're crushing it!
Right! Like, I was just born into this, you know? Like, I just became... I just was born Dave Good one day, and I'm just trying to be Dave Good, you know?
Yeah. And aren't we all?
Yeah.
Just trying to be Dave Good.
You know, right. Yeah. Just trying to make sense of this world that we got born into, you know? And so, but yeah, I know that is, it is interesting. This like the, you know, just what we're talking about, like the, what power does to you, what driving does to you. Mm-hmm. There's a murderer. You met the Uber murderer?
No.
Oh, this is so amazing. And there's a reason that you don't know. Because, like, the powers that be don't want you to know this story, right?
Okay.
But you know me. I'm going to fucking find this story. And so this guy says... So, like, this guy was picking up people and dropping them off and shooting, like, every other one.
After... He dropped them off?
Yeah.
Or so like, not in the car, but...
Just yeah. all combinations of that. Okay. But he would, like, kill someone and then keep his app on and then pick someone else up. And they'd be like, hey, have you heard about these murders? He was like, yeah, who's that crazy guy? And then just drop him off scot-free. And they asked him what went wrong. He was like, well, Uber is a mind control device. And it got locked into me and I had to do whatever the app told me to do, right? And that guy... is talking about something very real. Like, the second you download that app, you, whatever, subscribe. I was going to say ascribe.
Uh-huh.
Subscribe to the notifications, you know? So you're just sitting there, and it's like, boop, hey, this is Lyft. People are getting a lot of money at LAX right now. Why don't you drive to LAX? Wouldn't that be a good idea for you? And the thing is, no, it's a terrible idea. It's 4:30 p.m. The last thing in the world you want to do is get in your car and drive to LAX at 4:30. That's a terrible idea. They're fucking lying to you.
It's a mind control.
Exactly. It is. You know, and that's how they structure the bonuses. Like, because right. You get the bonus on Sunday night, right? You can't get your high volume weekend rides until the very end. So you can't start out on Monday and get ahead of the game. There just aren't that many rides available. That's how it's been structured. And so the only way... Eventually, the most pain-free way to do it was to get 25 rides during the week. And then, starting on Friday at about 7 o'clock, as soon as rush hour started to die, then you just go as much as you
all
can go.
Long,
go
yeah.
all weekend long.
Yeah.
You know, go till 4.
Yeah.
Go 7 to 4, then 7 to 4... And then Sunday drivers, oh my God. even now, like when I have a 9-to-5 job, I still can't believe that I do. And like when I'm at the grocery store, like I went to get my standard energy drink, and people are just tooling around shopping like they got nothing going on, not a care in the world. Like, I'm just like,
come on,
give me a break. I'm working here, people. You know.
Are you finding now you have road rage like all the time?
I mean, I still work super early, so yeah. I'm not in the 9-to-5 loop, but I'll never understand it. Patrick told someone I was getting domesticated. I'm not, Patrick.
Ooh, he's taking exception to that.
Taking exception to that. My platonic domestic life partner, Patrick, sometimes says things where I'm like, ah. I will address this on the podcast when you cannot retort. But no, so you try to, like, you can't drive your, like, Sunday noon to 5 in LA. You're not going to make good money. Your rides are going to be shitty. They're going to be people trying to shop, et cetera. You know, it's not the same. Whereas weirdly, 3 a.m. on Saturday, that's super interesting, you know.
Well, I'm sure it is.
And then now we're talking about sex workers, you know. Yeah. That's when I'm dealing with a very high percentage of sex workers. And then that, you know, I mean, I love that I've done hospitality for some of the most famous people in the world. And for the people they pay to fuck them, you know. Like, they're...
It's good to be well-rounded.
Yeah. You know, and that's just a whole other experience of how do you, you know, I can't say, hey, can I, like, call your mom? I don't know what their mom is like, you know? I don't know how they got there. I can't say, hey, I think you should stop this, because there's, like, you know, and the thing is, at 3M, the sex workers, the gender breakdown is 50-50, you know? Oh. Right? Because it's, like, young boys and young girls, yeah, right. Both.
Probably, especially in LA, I would...
Yeah.
I don't know. That's... Yeah. Maybe there's a generalization I shouldn't make.
It was just... It was wild. Like, one, you know, just how to... I just tried to be their friend, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because at first I didn't know, because I'm dumb. I'd be like, was that a great party? And they're like, I didn't go to a party there.
Not
nice
so
house you got. Hey, that's not my house, dude. You know? And, I mean, that's also, like, really informs my politics. Like, I'm literally furious every day that they do not get health care. You know, that the sex workers of L.A. do not get health care. Like, they're going
Who needs it more than
right,
they
Right, they're servicing the richest people in the world. And those people could get them health care. They could pull those strings. And they don't fucking do it. Oh, my God.
Sex workers and Lyft drivers.
No healthcare, yeah.
Yeah. My brother works for the Department of Labor investigating businesses, and he refuses to drive Lyft or Uber.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I understand. I mean, I ride with them, you know.
Yep.
I wonder if I lost my 5-star rider rating. I know I was both a 5-star driver and a 5-star rider. And that was, you know, at one point, Jenny Jones, my rating in LA was a 4.99.
No.
And that means that I was the best for those, like, 4 days.
Yeah.
I was the number one. There's like three, I don't know how many tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Lyft drivers there are. But, I mean, I did it, you know, and that in itself is a whole kind of performance. I'm a little like a sex worker, like a mental sex worker, you know, like.
I don't know if I'm going along with that.
Yeah.
But, no, I see where you're going. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, just like being whoever they wanted me to be is what I mean.
Oh, yeah, it is a performance. And you know? I imagine that the moment they get in, you're gauging their energy. What's happening in their day? Do they want to be talked to? Do they not? I mean, like you said, even the music, but...
Yeah, I have the standard... I mean, I would never talk to single women unless they really verbally indicated that they wanted to talk.
You're a rare bird, because holy crap. It's like, can't I just get through a ride without...
I mean, it's so weird.
Talking.
It's like, I know... I mean, I think a lot of it is like, it's hard to get beyond your programming, you know, like my dude programming. And so a beautiful woman gets in the lift and right away the program starts to run. This is fate, Dave, that brought the two of you together.
What could happen next?
Exactly. You know, I bet they're just waiting for someone to talk to them, you know, like this. These are the things that play in our head, even though, of course, they don't want to be. You're a strange man. Like, you know, like I met, who was it? The guy that founded Napster.
Ah.
Like, I think it was his girlfriend or maybe girlfriend or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But this girl was a genius, clearly. And, like, I mean, I don't know what top 99.9% of boobs that have ever existed was like this woman's boobs. And I just drive. I just, 90 seconds in, I ask the temperature. That's the thing, right? So 90 seconds in, hey, is the temperature okay? Do you need a window up, a window down, air on, air off? Because that's a legitimate human question, you know?
And that way you can gauge.
Right. And then I'm,
if they're up for more. Yeah.
Then they maybe say something after that, you know, and then I'll talk. And then I'll talk to a wealthy billionaire's beautiful girlfriend for a ride, you know, and just talk about whatever. But they're dictating what I'm going to talk about. I mean, I've driven a lot of people, 1,400 plus Lyft rides, you know, plus additional hospitality work. And I tell these stories of the amazing things that happen. And then people are like, oh, if I did that, these things will happen to me too. And it's, you gotta be very open. You can't make anything happen. You know, you're just
right.
I think hospitality is a very, I consider it a spiritual practice. You know, that I am,
I love that.
I am loving everyone regardless of who they are. And I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. And I'm giving them my friendship for no reason. They may have earned it. They may have not. They might deserve it. They might not.
You're taking care of them.
Yeah, I'm taking care of them. And I really enjoy taking care of people, which is something I've learned over these. I've had a really rough couple of years, the transition out of LA and what I thought was going to be back to my hometown and then not. I mean, that's like Frodo, right? Frodo throws the ring into Mordor, and then he goes back to the Shire.
It's not quite the same.
Yeah. Sam, it's perfect for Sam. He marries the girl. Like, I was like, I want to be Sam. I want to.
You're never going to be Sam. Not to say you'll never marry the girl, but it's for a simpler human.
I mean, so hospitality is a spiritual practice. I really enjoy it. You know, I don't ask any questions about what their motivations are. I mean, I picked up a guy in Lyft who was a fixer, you know?
Oh, like, who was he, Mr.? I wanted to say Mr. Black, but I'm conflating two.
Oh, right. The
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. Was it the Wolf or something?
Mr. Wolf?
Mr. Wolf, maybe? Yeah. That, like, this guy was a fixer, and he's not a good person. Like, in terms of an immediate read you get on someone, like, this is not a good person. And I'm taking you to his house, and he tells me that, like, he rents the upstairs. And he rented it to some squatters, right? Because there's a thing in L.A. that it's hard to get evicted. So you can get an apartment and then quit paying rent. And it takes, like, 6 months to evict them. So these people are like, I'm going to play the squatter game with a fixer. And he was like, they were out in 3 days. I'm not going to tell you what I did, but okay, well, here, let me get as close to the door as I possibly can. Yeah. You know,
nothing like, if it's here.
Right. you know, but that was the, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about movies or not, but there was something I was thinking about that goes along with this in terms of movies, and it's about, like, Black Panther and Wonder Woman.
Okay.
Right? And I don't know if you saw those movies.
I saw both of them.
Yeah. And so, what did you like them?
I did. I didn't like Wonder Woman as much as I wanted to, but I feel like with movies, so much is about expectations.
Sure.
And so if you go in with super high expectations, it's really hard to have them met.
Yeah.
And when you do, you know it's something really special. But I liked them both.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. No, I had similar. I really dug Wonder Woman the first time I saw it, and then I watched it again. And when it wasn't like, I was just very into, you know, it was like, there's a powerful woman character on yes. the screen, and this yes. is very overwhelming to me. And whereas Black Panther, I felt, stood up better on second viewing. But same thing, like, yeah. it's just so powerful to see this particular kind of imagery that's always portrayed one way, portrayed a different way. And both of them made me cry a little bit. Mm-hmm. And but the thing is, there's this other, like, any movie, you can read it a number of ways, right? And you can read it for race, gender, whatever. And you can read it for what does it say about women? And you can read it for what does it say about men? Mm-hmm. And you can read it for what it says about white men. And I, both those movies, Wonder Woman and Black Panther, there is a scene where a white man sacrifices himself for the cause of either a black man or a woman, right?
See, I don't even remember that.
Right. That's so funny. It's like this part, it's very much of the action movie trope, right? Where generally the way that an action movie goes is either the black character or the best friend woman,
right
dies in service of the white male lead's goals. Mm-hmm. And there's even a play on that in various action movies of like, when is the black man going to die? You know, is it going to be right away? Is it going to be right before the end? And they're always sacrificing themselves in lieu of the goal of the white male character. Well, in both Wonder Woman, like the veteran, the military guy that mm-hmm. she meets, the good looking military guy,
yes.
he like flies his plane into something at yeah. the end of the movie and dies. Same thing in Black Panther, the like CAA guy
yeah.
like flies his plane. So he does this thing that's in service of their goal. And I felt really warm and fuzzy about that in terms of that's the story that never gets told about white dudes, is that in spite of all that, some of us sometimes do sacrifice for the goals of...
For the greater good.
For the greater fucking good, you know? And that is... You know, it's like there's like calling out men and getting them in line from their bad behavior. Mm. You know, the same thing at work, mm-hmm. you know, but then there's also encouraging their good behavior. It's like mm-hmm. kids, you know, being like, hey, when you see a dude do something really supportive, that's a great time to be like, hey, thanks, dude, for fighting all this fucked up programming that says you're supposed to turn this into an opportunity for sex or an opportunity for power, an opportunity for money, and like, you know.
Thanks, white dude.
Yeah, thanks, white dude. You know, but not, you're not, now we're going to put you in charge, but just like, you know, just an appropriate side yeah. thank you. And not that that needs to be top on the list at all, but I'm just saying for me, when I'm watching that, right. there's like this moment of like, oh, you know, like, I know there's
legitimacy.
Value in being yeah. supportive, you know, and I want to be a supportive person. That's a big part of my life is being supportive, you know? And so, yeah. I'm just saying that's the beauty of those particular films that like, that they're giving the primary character and the primary story to groups of people who don't have it. But then also there's this like lesson for white dudes in the mid, like the secondary yeah. positive lesson.
But I kind of look at that trope a little differently in that I think of the history of it and I think about, free will. And so in both the cases you mentioned, the white guy's doing this, he's making the decision to do this.
Oh, sure.
But how often in films is, you know, the African-American character killed off right away, not because they're choosing to save
oh, sure.
the day, but just because they're a throwaway or...
Right.
I don't know.
No, that's an excellent point.
So...
It makes me want to write a movie where, like, a white dude yeah. just gets off for no reason. We need
well,
some of that too.
Goes.
And then I can just be like, yeah, that was like the time I thought something was going to happen for me. And then it didn't even come close to happening. You know, like
yeah.
I'm just, you know, that's the, It's like there's value in any kind. What I'm saying is there's value in any kind of story.
Sure.
But it's like when we're telling the same story for these different groups, like that becomes damaging. You know what I'm saying? So
yes,
it's like, like I love the movie Drive so much. I tell you, I bought the Scorpion jacket.
No.
I do. I have the Scorpion jacket from Drive.
Okay.
I feel like I've earned it.
Mm-hmm.
I would have worn it for my last driving gig, but it was too cold. I was relieved it was too cold, but like sometime I'm going to get a driving gig and I'm going to wear the fucking Scorpion jacket.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. But that's a movie about opportunities that appear and then just go away. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's, I think, really core to the LA experience. Like you can try to be like, hey, I'm trying to be a race car driver. I'm just trying to be a mechanic.
Right.
You know, but if you're good, there's so much will to power in LA that someone who wants a race car is going to find you and say, hey, drive my race car. And then you're like, okay, I'll drive your race car. Sure. But then the corruption immediately destroys that opportunity. Like, you know, that sometimes opportunities appear and it's like a flower that blooms for one day and it's so real and then it's totally, totally gone.
Hmm.
You know, like a black man in an action movie.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Blossomed for 2 minutes.
Right, for 2 minutes. He was like,
blown to smithereens.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Or, you know, whatever. How many tangential female characters who are there in service of this role, but yeah, no, so you know, I had been thinking about that before you brought up potentially talking about it.
Well, I'm really fascinated by this question of what makes a movie a male movie or a female movie. Because I just think people have such a wide variety of ideas about that. And I was just curious about your take on that. Like, is it about, you know, who the director is? Is it about the story? Is it the kind of humor? Like, I think about Bridesmaids, which ostensibly is a movie for women.
Sure.
And the scatological humor, though, is not typically what you think of.
Sure.
You know, as female humor.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good point. Because, yeah, Bridesmaids is, I mean, I think when you've got stereotypes, there's so much money in, like, L.A. does what L.A. thinks is going to work. L.A.'s not interested in new ideas. They just want to, whatever has made money in the past, we want to do that again.
I know.
And then these, like, revolutionary people bust through that and are like, no, you can make money. It's the Lord of the Rings. Nerds will buy tickets. There's more nerds than you can ever possibly imagine. And then immediately they're like, churn that, you know,
yes,
like, make copies of that. Make a new cookie cutter and try to stamp that out.
And recreate this experience.
Recreate this experience, yeah.
That is so hard to do.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. And, I mean, it's like people getting something that they wanted that they didn't know that they wanted, that's the best thing, you know?
Right. And so how do you predict that?
Yeah, and that's magic. That's alchemy. That's, you have to commune with the gods and take ayahuasca or, you know, like, do some kind of process to, Arthur Miller said, it's, you build a lightning rod. You know, and that he got to death of a salesman by, you're just building a better and better lightning rod.
Hmm.
And then lightning will strike, you know, and then, you know, I mean, that's, I believe that firmly, that like the David Show is a lightning rod that I am continually building in the hopes that, you know, the things will align and whatever it is, random chance. You know, that's like, I want to be like, when someone's like when a dude's like, I'm a feminist, you know, I want to be, it's just disgusting.
Sorry.
I want to be like, hey, so do you worship a god or a goddess? And then they're like, no, God has no gender. And I'm like, no, goddess has no gender. You like, you see what you did there?
Yes.
You immediately gendered it, you
yes.
know? And that, I did that when I was in college. I started worshiping. I mean, I'm agnostic, but I started to consciously worship a goddess. And I think that's a really strange thing.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know much about Discordianism and Khaleesi, the goddess of chaos and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like a Timothy Leary thing, but like a male god of order, female god of chaos.
Okay.
You know, and worship, you know, chaos, like, you know, a happy, positive chaos, like that you cannot control life. And So, yeah, so I was like, I want to worship a goddess, because if God has no gender, then it does not matter. But if I'm like, oh, I'm just going to imagine this genderless thing, like it's, you too immediately amorphous. Start to gender it. It immediately becomes a light in the sky. Mm-hmm. It immediately becomes a giant cock in the sky, you know, like, it's just like three iterations. And so,
that's just how it goes.
Yeah. So anyway, so like, I think that's a huge part of the whole man's movie, woman's movie thing, is just Hollywood trying to give people what they have previously liked. Hmm. And and it's a stereotype, because I met a lot of women who like action movies, and I've met a lot of men who want to watch Love Actually like every single day of their entire life, you know?
Right. Well, and you know probably why this is a fascinating question to me. I know you mentioned before about the books that I wrote, and they're both on ostensibly male films, even though they're dramatically different. So
right.
The Godfather and The Big Lebowski. So it's an interesting question to me. And one of the things I've thought about it is, what if it's about experiences that only men or only women can have? And I think that there are very, very few of those in the world. But so my definition of a really male movie is Glengarry Glen Ross.
Because I
just feel like there's something about what the dads taught these guys.
Yeah.
That I have no touch point for. I just have no sense of it all. And so it didn't make sense to me. I could appreciate it as good acting or an interesting storyline, but I couldn't connect with it in this real primal way.
Sure. I think that's a really smart observation, you know, because sales movies are such a big deal to me. I mean, Death of a Salesman, Glengarry Glen Ross is a huge deal to me. I feel like that is quintessential male in America experience. That is what it's like. It is that cold, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I just think about Alec Baldwin talking about
Coffee's for Closers.
Well, yeah, Coffee's for Closers, and just like him saying like, yeah, I know what they'll say. They'll say that sales is a tough business, you know? I couldn't hack it, you know? It's like, what? I mean, just like, it's just you saying whatever it takes.
Yeah.
To get it done. I mean, like, that's something that I get about the president that people don't get, is that, no, he takes a great deal of pleasure in selling the most ludicrous possible thing. There's, like, two types of salesmen. There's salesmen like myself who, like, I want to sell you the best thing that's going to make you happy at a fair price. And I'm going to sell the best thing, and it's going to be a good price, and I'm going to make so many friends along the way that I'm going to be successful, you know? And then there's the, like, I want to sell you this like stained pillow. Patrick's pillow is not stained, but like, I want to sell you a stained pillow for $1 million. Right? And that's the,
and can I do
can
that?
Can I fucking do it? And I'm like, no, I told this person that I told them that I was wearing Bermuda shorts and I was in a suit. And I told them that, you know, I do want to get them to believe something that is not real. Is a huge part of the culture of, that's billionaire culture.
Yeah, and where's the pleasure in that? Oh, it's like conquering something.
Right, yeah, right. No, it's dark. It's a dark pleasure. It's the ring of power. Then you're like, it's drinking from the chalice of blood, you know? Yeah. Like, I want to share the good power, the holy grail power.
Right.
You know, the white magic, not the black magic, you know? But that is the dark shit of like, selling things, selling a used car that doesn't work for a ton of money, and you're just like, hey, sorry, the universe isn't fair, you know? It's kill or be killed out there, don't you know? You know, and that's what the president learned from his dad. You know, that's what the president's dad was telling him, you know? You have no friends. I don't know if you read the Psychopath Test, the John Ronson book.
Mm-mm.
But psychopaths love to say, if you want a friend, get a dog. That's like the favorite thing of a psychopath to say, you know? But no, I think that's very true, that I would definitely consider that a men's movie. I mean, I'm really debating. Like, now Patrick has a TV that displays Netflix, right? And for the longest time, we both are... I have a TV, no internet. Patrick has had no internet, no TV, but he got a TV. There might be a lady who wants to watch Netflix involved in this situation, but, you know, I'm fully supportive. What bothers me is that Netflix is trying to get you to watch the movies that they want you to watch, right? Like, I like action movies, and so then Netflix is like, oh, don't you want to watch more action movies, right? And no, Netflix, I want to be challenged. So I did this thing, and I do want this in the podcast. This is my Netflix hack.
All right.
It's super awesome. What you do...
Prepare yourself here.
Yeah. You go to Rotten Tomatoes... And you sort by streaming service, you sort by Netflix, and then you sort by critical rating on Rotten Tomatoes. And then Rotten Tomatoes will tell you the most critically acclaimed movies on Netflix, not what Netflix is telling you to watch, but just what gets the highest critical rating and what gets the highest audience rating. And so then you have to scroll through a couple pages of straight five stars for like classics that were very reviewed, and then you just get to good movies. And that's how I found this movie that I cannot remember the name of, but it's a South Korean lesbian morality tale, right? And I watched this movie and I fucking love this movie. And let me tell you, those two ladies fuck the dudes up, you know? Like, it is like a brutal feminist tale, but like, the characters are awesome. The story is awesome. It grabs a hold of you and doesn't let go. You know, and that's what I want.
Right.
You know, I don't want to watch...
Well, that's a good hack. Yeah, Netflix seems so confused by me.
Yeah.
Like, well, you liked this, yeah, but then you liked that. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, no, and I think, you know, but, yeah. I mean, that's very interesting, the men's movie versus the women's movie thing.
Well, and so I can't... It may be an interesting concept, but I can't play it out very well because I can't think of too many experiences like that that are solely, you know, vast majority of only women experience this or only men. I mean, you've got things like The Accused, where most men don't have the fear of walking through a dark alley, and most women have. But, like, in terms of the male experience, other than Glengarry Glen Ross, I can't really think of anything else. I mean, The Godfather, I think, on its face is a very male film. But it's sort of a touch point for me. Like, when women say they like The Godfather, I don't know. I give them a little extra credence.
Sure. No, that's what I was thinking about. Because I'm like, how, like... You like basketball and know a ton about The Godfather.
Right.
Like, is that some kind of ingrained sexism in me? Being like, oh, she's got these, likes these traditional dude things. So then I'm like, that makes you more awesome. Right? I mean, I don't really know, but I know.
Or the opposite, depending on what
right,
you think
but
about
I,
that.
Right, or the opposite. But I mean, I know that, I just like it when people are into their thing, you know, whatever that thing is.
Yeah.
You know, like, it can, I have a friend... A woman who's like super into shoes, and I like to hear her talk about shoes because, like, when somebody is passionate about something, it's interesting to me, you know?
It's true. Yeah, I actually knew a man who had like 100 pairs of shoes.
Yeah, shit, my brother's got like 60 pairs of Nikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a thing. Jay-Z's got a lot of shoes.
Yeah. So have you ever, I'm sort of changing the subject, but have you ever seen L.A. Plays Itself? Speaking of movies in
I
L.A.
I fell asleep to it like three different times.
Oh, so you're not going
to
do it?
No, I mean, it's on Netflix. I need to see it for sure, you know, especially if I'm going to, it's required viewing for me to continue to do this. But no, I mean, my favorite, you know, that I think that the scene in The Godfather when... Robert Duvall talks to the movie producer is the most insightful scene about Hollywood. I feel like that is quintessential Hollywood because that is about producers identifying young virginal women who they want to sexually exploit and turn into stars and make the sexual exploitation the reason that they became a star. And so, whatever the...
And when he's thwarted,
when
then...
When he's thwarted... I'm just saying that when, whatever, the guy with the olive oil voice, he was, that's like such a racist thing to say. I
forget. And his guinea charms.
Yeah, and his guinea charms.
That's from the movie, by
That's from the movie.
Waltz.
Yeah, ruins everything.
Yeah.
That then he destroys his career, you know, and that, I mean, that's also like, in a, you know, I mean, that's an experience I've had in the restaurant business before of like, Dave, why do I, like, some cook will decide he fucking hates me because all of the women like me and like talking to me, and that just drives him crazy. Like, how dare you, Dave Good, get along well with these women that I love, you know?
See, this is why it was so hard for me to be a waitress, is, and speaking about power, is you have absolutely no control over anything. You don't know how many customers you're going to have, how busy it's going to be. So you don't have any control over the money you're making.
Sure.
You can't control the food that's coming out. And if a cook decides they don't like you, they retaliate.
Yeah, yeah.
And
no,
it's awful.
That's the truth, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just like your fault for not pleasing that man, you know?
So what are you supposed to do? Not talk to the other women?
Right, yeah. No, I'm just saying it doesn't generally work.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I work at a restaurant now and everyone in charge is a woman and it's a much better situation, you know? I mean, there's a lot less of that. I mean, that's just like, this is...
Yeah, well, that's my new, I just got a new job and it's in that business.
Yeah,
so.
Which is, I mean, like, that's just like a very interesting, you know, I feel like I've been through some kind of social media crucible where my political views were twisted into something that they were not. And, because of my whatever radical left position, I love working for women. I'm usually work for women, you know.
Well, when you work in the arts.
Yeah, there's a lot of women in charge, and so I usually work for women. And then people are like, hey, Dave, was that a great experience every single time? No. You know?
Yeah.
Like, in general... Yes. I mean, but that's what I'm, you know, talking about generalities. Yeah, women are much better at sharing power. They're generally more sensitive, like if I'm sick or hurt, or they're more understanding about that. They're more empowering. But that's not to say that I haven't had male bosses who were like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever, cishet male bosses who were like that. I've had... gay men bosses who were terrible, you know?
As have I.
Yeah, right? You know, it's like, it's a stare. It's just like, it's...
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's very difficult, you know, to... It's a very difficult concept for people to hold in their heads. You know, just like... So there's like white men in the world, and I am one of those, and there's the things that white men have done, and those things are, let's just say, highly problematic, you know? But then there's me, Dave Good, the human spirit, you know, where it's just like, I was just born into this. I didn't choose my parents. I didn't choose my background. I didn't choose any of this. I'm just trying to make sense of it, you know? And I think that, I don't know, I just wish we were better about talking to people about their own experiences. Just everyone, you know, when someone's like, this is where I'm coming from,
mm-hmm.
you know, to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, in so many realms, I think that's true. I wish we all just came from a place of expecting the best of people.
Yeah.
And I think life would be easier then, but...
You know, the thing is, you gotta shut them down when they're bad, you know? I mean, that's like a part of, like, I just had this moment in L.A. where I was just like, I am tired of all the killing, you know? Like, I've had to do so much getting these bad, you know, killing people for trying to... corrupt my utopias, you know? Like, what's that? Isn't that the John Sayles movie, Men with Guns? I'm talking about... Or The Mosquito Coast.
Oh, yeah.
you know?
Isn't that a good one?
Yeah, the Mosquito Coast is so good, but it's like you build these utopias, and then these unscrupulous, usually men, are going to come to destroy it. Mm-hmm. And so that's... My result is that is like, you just got to kill those fuckers. Like, you know, at that point, you just have to take them out, you know? Otherwise, they're going to destroy your utopia. I mean, that's... You know, I mean, I think a core part of masculinity is you are trained to kill. I mean, your whole life, it's always like, at some point, you might have to kill someone. Mm-hmm. And you need to be prepared to do that. And that's in the games that boys play. And it's reinforced by moms and dads, you know. I mean, that's like, some of the most fucked up things about gender ever said to me have been said to me by, like, 50-year-old white women who had 3 glasses of wine, and they're like, no, this is what men are like, this is how men are supposed to be,
right?
And I'm like, what you're saying is so fucked, you know, just this like being in control all the, when you're telling a man to be in control all the time, you are reinforcing rape culture, you know, like you're saying control everything around you. No, you don't control everything around you. This is freedom, we're people, you know. And so but yeah, I mean, that's a real part of being a man, is being trained to kill. And, you know, like, that's sales, that's Glengarry Glen Ross, that's what they're doing all day, is they're killing, you know, they're...
Well, I also feel like most men I've met have some story about getting punched in the face.
Or yeah.
Punching someone in the face.
Right.
I don't have that story. Which is probably good, but yeah. At the same time... I don't know. I feel like I'm missing out.
Well, I mean, there's something good about it, you know? Like, that's like another, like, I mean, I think that's, I don't know, like, I think it's like even a comedy trope at this point, but like, when I'm hanging out with groups of women and one of them says something so mean about another woman, like something meaner than I've ever imagined a person saying.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, that's because you guys don't punch each other in the face.
It'd be much better.
You know?
Oh, yeah, the meanest things ever said to me were by women.
Yeah.
Women, friends. Like, yeah. It's, wow.
No, it's intense. And me too, like, when I've, like, you know, like, hung out with, that's another thing about this time. I mean, I had this incident where, so, calling men out for bad behavior, right? When social media, that's not even real. Like, who gives a shit? They can't say anything back to you. You're just calling out men in general. Well, yeah, that's a piece of cake. You've got no negative... You might get a bad comment from someone you don't know. Repercussions. Whereas, like, saying, hey, dude, who I've known for 25 years, the way that you're acting and behaving around women is not cool. Right? Well, what's he gonna say? He's gonna say... Hey, do you remember when you were 19 and you got drunk and you did this or said this? Like, immediately they're going to be like, what makes you so awesome? Mm-hmm. So you got to be prepared for that. Mm-hmm. And be prepared to say, hey, well, I made a mistake then. I mean, I wrote papers about what I thought women were like when I was 16. I've read those papers. I hope they don't ever fall into the wrong hands, you know? I was a 16-year-old boy, you know?
Yeah.
I was an idiot.
I liked Pretty Woman.
Right.
What? What do you...
Tomato, tomato, you know? But that, you know, it affects your relationships. And the thing is, this friend of yours, this male friend who, let's say, is behaving in a not cool way towards women... He might be very charismatic. He might be one of the leaders of your male friend group. And then you challenge him, and then you'll get kicked out of that friend group.
Right.
And so...
Risky.
Risky. It's super risky. And the thing is, you can then go hang out with your group of women friends, but the odds of them wanting to talk about your fantasy football team are low.
Pretty low.
You know?
Yeah.
And also, women are mean, you know?
Yeah, they're brutal.
You know, they're brutal. And so then you have to deal with that, like, you know, I mean, this is a big part of how I think Patrick and I have become much better friends since moving back. Because, like, Patrick and I are, you know, Patrick does not behave in a problematic way towards women, you know? Mm-hmm. And we can hang out. Patrick and I don't talk about sports. He's not a sport guy. But we talk about whatever – you know, dude-like stuff, the experience of being a dude and can share what life is like in that way. But no, but like, yeah, calling out men is problematic. You know, it's not, it doesn't go how you think it's going to go. You know, I mean, it's like you have it in your head how this is going to go. I mean, every once in a while it does. I mean, one of my oldest friends,
yeah,
one day I was like, hey, you're saying gay in a derogatory way. Uh-huh. And he was like, you're saying retard in a derogatory way. And I was like, oh my God, I am so sorry. And he was like, oh my God, I am so sorry.
Oh.
And then that was...
There you go.
And then we quit doing it. You know, yeah. It's like...
So. Well, it's an interesting time. I mean, you know, white women are being called to task a lot lately. And they need to be.
Yeah.
So it's a balance of recognizing your power, recognizing your privilege, trying not to use it in a way that hurts other people, and listening. But it's hard.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm hearing from you, too.
Well, and the thing is, everybody loves privilege, right? Like,
yeah, why not? You know, wouldn't choose
right,
it?
Right, right, right. And, like, I mean, I just went through, so... Like, I went through 2 years of not having the level of privilege that I normally have, right? Like, I left L.A. I mean, it really was when I became a full-time Lyft driver, right? Mm. So now I'm not producing any shows. I don't have any contacts that anybody needs. I don't have any access to niche party scenes. I don't have any of that. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a lot of money. I don't have a nice apartment. I don't have any of that stuff. And when you don't have privilege to offer people, they're just kind of like, hey, man, whatever,
right,
you know?
Right.
And they're like, well, you're clearly not a successful person if you don't have any privilege, you know? I mean, it's very complicated. And I'm like so relieved to have some privilege again, you mm-hmm. know? It's very... It's the only thing what I was saying earlier, I don't know if you're recording, like, I don't want to be a part of nothing, you know?
Right.
I think that's a lot of privilege. It's like you're a part of this group, and then because you're a part of this group, you get, like, certain privileges, you know? And so...
Right.
Like, that's the... But, you know, it's like, no one has ever been like, no, I would not like those VIP passes. I want to pay for my own drinks and sit with the crowd, you know?
Right. Right. Well, so much, I think a lot about community, because what I've learned in the past couple of years working at different places is, and even like the Lebowski book, like what subcultures are out there. Like everything has a subculture. The strangest things. Orchids
yeah.
has a subculture. And they're apparently really tightly wound people, by
yeah.
the way. But... and so I think we're just all living our lives trying to find a community. And if that community is the VIP community, so much the better.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I think that's true. You want to find a community, you know, I had a really long conversation with an African-American musician over the weekend, and he was a very interesting guy. He was making political statements that no one was prepared for. I really liked him, you know, like
yeah.
he was saying things that people didn't think a guy like him was gonna think and gonna say and things like that. But, huh. you know, he talked about, he's like, look, cause he's someone who grew up with more privilege than people would think that he did. He highly educated,
right?
But also, near the wrong side of the tracks. And he's like, look, they don't fucking want you on the other side of the tracks.
No.
Like, get the fuck out of here. And he's like, I get it that if I go to a small town in the Midwest, they're going to be like, a small, poor town. It's like, hey, get the fuck out of here. Like, all they have is their identity, their connection to this town, you know? Like, so I understand, you know, like, they're creating... Whatever, they're in a... If they're kicking someone out of the club, then at least they're in a fucking club.
Right.
You know, and that's a very... You know, obviously these ideas lead to genocide, too, you know.
There we get all leads to genocide. Yeah.
No, that's like my joke. That's the one glass ceiling I don't want ever broken, is the genocide glass ceiling. You know, like I think that... Women should not aspire to break the glass ceiling on genocide. I think they should just let that one.
Have you read The Power?
No, I haven't.
It's a recent book, and in it, women have evolved so that they realize they have this power, this electricity that comes out of their fingers, and they can kill men very easily. Mm. And it's sort of what happens after that to society. Mm. It's kind of interesting.
Mm. No, I bet it is. I mean, I saw season one of The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh,
and
talk about brutal.
Oh, man, and I was so, like, it had been attached to so many agendas before I watched it.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if I was going to like it.
Had you ever read it?
I had not read it.
I read it way back when, so
yeah.
it was a different time.
Yeah, and I really dug it. There's a driver in it, right?
That's true.
You know, and he's trying to be a good guy. I really like that the female protagonist had multiple sexual partners, and that was, like, okay. It wasn't an indictment of her character. You
broke
know?
Up a marriage. And
yeah, like did yeah. some stuff,
yeah.
you know?
Live some life, yeah.
Yeah, live some life, because life is very complicated, you know? It's very complicated. And so, yeah, it was like, I lost my privilege. I had to quit dating because it was too painful to constantly explain why I did not have enough privilege to date the privileged ladies I had previously been dating, you know? And so that's been, you know, I just had to quit doing it. I mean, lucky for me, it was not like I'd never been on a date before.
Yeah.
So I wasn't like, oh, I've wasted my life never spending time with cool women. I've definitely done that, but it was, you know, it was like a thing, but I mean, The Handmaid's Tale kind of helped me because I'd like, it's easy for, like, here's another one of my life philosophies is that when everyone is mad about something, there's a reason behind it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a thing like in the alt-right man community of being like, oh, I'm too poor to get married, you know? They're like super upset about that and they say horrible things about women, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, they're like misdirecting their anger because it's everyone. It's the everything.
Right.
You know, the patriarchy is everywhere and it's saying that you as a man, your value of who you are, Glengarry Glen Ross,
yeah.
How much have you closed? How big, what kind of watch do you have? What kind of car do you have? This is 100% what your value is as a man, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this quote that I picked up from The Sopranos. I said on the internet it was from The Sopranos, and man, did I get mansplained to by a wide range of people that it was not from The Sopranos. But depression is rage turned inward, right?
Right.
And so when someone says to you, hey, you're not as much of a man because the size of your bank account, mm-hmm. size of your car, your response should be rage, not at yourself, but like at the fucking world for making that a thing and for not understanding all of the rape, murder, etc. that happens because of that premise, because your masculinity is tied into how much you own.
Hmm.
And then what do you do with that rage, right?
Right.
Well, you turn it into art. That's what you do. You write fucking music. You make mm-hmm. movies. You create something beautiful in the world out of your rage. That's like a nonprofit. If I could start a nonprofit that wasn't the Dave Good Show, that I wanted to do slightly less than the Dave Good Show,
yeah.
It'd be like trading guitars for guns.
Uh-huh.
I'd be like, hey, I will give you a guitar if you give me your gun. And like a straight up exchange.
Right.
And I'm not here to make a value judgment on your gun. I'm
or
just
how you play guitar.
Right, exactly. I just would be much more comfortable if these, you know, whatever, the small town white dudes who everyone is so incredibly mad at, but I don't think have real solutions for. I feel like that is a solution. Like, hey, how about you jam in your garage and try to turn that rage that you're misdirecting either at women or at yourself,
mm-hmm.
turn that into something else or whatever that is, you know, do, you know, use that, you know, go on that journey, that artistic journey, self-discovery, all that awesome stuff. But That's what I'm saying, is that rage there is real. Like, you know, it's rough. Yeah.
Try being a, you know, what did I just, I'm turning 48.
Yeah.
Woman, single woman. That.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about losing your privilege.
Right, right. It's fucking fucked
up. And what can you do about that when you're
right.
just getting older?
Right, there's nothing that you can do.
There's nothing
I
can do.
I am becoming more distinguished, you know?
You are.
Yeah. Thanks, Jane Jones. You know, like, it's this, men get this, like, we're entering our prime, whereas women are now like, oh, well, you're not going to be having any more babies, and, like, you know, your butt doesn't look the way your butt used to look, and so then you're like, it's bullshit. It's bullshit, and the response should be rage. The one therapist I ever liked was like, I like anger. You know,
I like anger better than sadness.
Right, yeah.
I feel like I can do things with that.
Right, that's exactly what she said. She was like, I'm not, if you're angry, I'm not going to tell you to not be angry.
It means you haven't given up.
Right, yeah. That's true. No, and I mean, and there was a time, you know, it's so, yeah, I've talked about this before. I mean, I lost two friends to overdoses, or I don't know, to mysterious circumstances. I lost some male friends.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened. I can only fill in the blanks, right? There were no real answers. I can look at their pictures on the internet and kind of try to determine what happened, you know, but it's a different thing. But when you're a man entering 40 and you're still working part-time at a restaurant and you still haven't sold your album, whatever. Yeah. You know, and just, it's fucked up shit. What I hope for, like, the world is there are still, as different as we all are, there are these universal things, you know, and like what we're talking about, like telling people that they don't have value because of these, like, really fucked up, you know, power-based, whatever, systems is, you know, something that we can... It feels good to dismantle. It feels good to burn that down. I mean, that's, like, what's been frustrating. People are like, I want to burn it all down. I'm like, me too, but I'm not talking about memes. And I'm not talking about retweets. You know, like,
right.
If you want to really challenge the system, like, that means, like, really challenging the system. That means not associating men, the value of men with these things, and the value of women with these things, and the, you know, all of the, you know.
Right, right.
You know, it means, like, you know, and everyone hanging out together. I mean, that's why I want to do live events, is I want to create a space for people to drink or not drink.
Create the community.
Yeah, create community.
Yeah.
Because that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
You know? And what the fuck, I gotta do something, you know?
That's right. There's your other tagline.
Yeah.
The Dave Good Show. What the fuck, I gotta do
something. Exactly. Exactly. You know? And I mean, and just like put that, it's like, hey, and if you're a person with big ideas, go with those big ideas, you know, do it respectfully, don't run people over, but there's enough for all of us to have one big thing that we do, you know. I mean, like, it's like, I get frustrated when people are like, oh, Dave, you're so far to the left, and it's like, hey, look, I fucking never miss a day of work. I always meet my sales goals, you know? Like, I get the world
You're
that we
closer,
live in.
Man.
I'm a fucking closer. I am. I'm a closer. I can close.
Yeah.
You know? But life is not about that. And, like, I'm not in control nearly all the time. But this show is just one thing where, you know, I want to build the utopia. You know, I want to build one utopia, you know? Which I know will eventually be burned down by the men with guns, but...
But maybe that's something to aspire to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been listening to The Dave Good Show.